Welcome back, guys. DGS 204. I'm here for the week. I was supposed to be in Colorado, but my daughter Phoebe developed an abscess on her tonsil. Anyone who's ever had one of those, you know what she's going through. Still sick as a dog on really heavy steroids, antibiotics, and we're hoping to get out later this week or next week, but, you know, it all depends on how she feels. Wheels, before we do Stairway to Kevin, let's update the Caitlin Clark thing just because it's so interesting to me sociologically. I did not expect this to happen. I didn't expect this to be the story that it is still, but every game that Caitlin Clark plays, especially against one of her rivals, like Reese, it's just everything to so many people, and people just know exactly what's going on, whichever side they come down on. These girls are villains, or she's a flopper, or she's this, or she's that. And to Caitlin Clark's credit, to my knowledge, all she's done is say she made a basketball play and she hit me, and that happens in big girl basketball, and nothing to see.
She's the only good guy in all of this, in my opinion. I think everybody else is using her for one thing or another. Like the big media takes, right? They're using it to get clicks because they know that people are interested in the topic, or they're using it to make some point about something. And she just, late last week, maybe even over the weekend, was like telling people, just please stop using me for your political points or anything like that. It's basketball. Like, none of this is about any of these things. This is about basketball. And then obviously over the weekend, Angel Reese was a technical, but got a flagrant foul called against her, against Caitlin late in the game. And it was a close game. And, you know, the Fever end up winning. So everything with Caitlin Clark becomes a story. And it, you know what it really reminds me of is the whole Tim Tebow thing. Like, Caitlin Clark's fans cannot see in any way where something that happens to her is not terrible and something she does is not great. Now, not to say that she's not great. She is. But the point is, the fandom is a little weird to me. It's a little bit over the top.
Tebow's a good analogy.
Yeah, and it's for different reasons, by the way. Totally different reasons. Although it's all rooted in college greatness, right? Tim Tebow is one of the greatest college football players that ever lived. And he was a terrible NFL player. And every team that had him figured that out really fast, which is why he didn't stick around very long.
I'm laughing because it's so true.
Now, she's a good player, though. Caitlin is legit. And as an athlete, she is not the basketball equivalent to Tim Tebow. She is a legitimate WNBA talent. And she's just a rookie, so she's having ups and downs. In some games, she looks great. Other games, looks terrible. That's not uncommon for rookies. And as everybody knows, college sports are not the same as the pros, right? In the pros, you're playing against grown people, people that are 35 years old, people that have been doing it for 10, 15 years longer than you. And it takes time to catch up with all that for most people. There are exceptions. There are rookies that go into professional sports, go to the big leagues, go to NFL, NBA, NHL, and they're amazing right away. Most rookies don't just get to be amazing right away, even those that were elite at the college level. But the phenomenon with Tebow was as much about who he was and how much people loved him as opposed to whether or not he was actually performing. And right now with Caitlin, it seems like nobody even cares about performance. It's all about the story. Did somebody hit her too hard? You know, I don't understand. I think there's a sports side where you can be critical of officials that are not officiating correctly. But then we don't need to make it bigger than what it is. We don't need to make it about, you know, her social status, or we don't need to make it about the color of people's skin or anything like that. This is a rookie who is by nature challenging veteran authority.
And it's rare that you can make a statement like I'm about to make and have it be so simple and true. And I'm not creating this. You've said it many times. If this were men's basketball, there's no story. Or if there is a story, it's a very simple, hey, welcome to the league, rookie, kind of story.
Now, I will say people now are more critical of those things in men's sports than they were 30 years ago as well. In part because every one of these things gets amplified on Twitter and TikTok. That didn't exist in Michael Jordan's time. It didn't exist in previous eras, men's or women's sport. So everything now does get blown up. And then what happens is people that don't follow sports have strong takes, even though they don't know what they're talking about. And then it just turns into this wildfire. Because when it gets that traction, then guys like Stephen A. Smith or Colin Cowherd or Dave Portnoy, like, then it rises to the level of they need to have takes on it too. And what you end up seeing is their takes are very much related to what their views of the world are. And that's why it's kind of had this nonstop energy, because everything gets that fuel. It gets the sunshine. It gets the oxygen, because everything is bigger on social media. So a hard foul on Michael Jordan would have been on SportsCenter at 11 p.m. at night that night. And it might have been talked about in Chicago the next day on The Score, which is our sister station there on the sports side. Now it's instantly blowing up on Twitter, instantly blowing up on TikTok, and it's getting exposure to people that wouldn't have been watching SportsCenter.
Mm-hmm. So I see mostly the chatter surrounding it rather than like any of the actual plays
right.
in question. So is the complaint from Caitlin Clark's fans mostly like she can't, they're putting too much heat on her and she can't take it?
No.
Because that's like insulting.
No, they're not saying it that way. What they're saying is essentially she's being targeted with dirty play.
Okay.
And in some cases that's been true, right? I mean, I've seen plenty of them where the highlights show you, yeah, that was a cheap shot. Absolutely a cheap shot. And cheap shots should be called as flagrant fouls. They should be lead to suspensions. But look at if you look at the NBA, there are several players in the NBA who cheap shot people all the time, and they're repeatedly fined over it and repeatedly suspended over it. And you don't get the buzz around that outside of basketball. In the basketball world, in the NBA fandom, those are big topics, and they're something that people talk about, but they don't gain the oxygen. They don't get the status that the Caitlin Clark thing does, in part because the fringe groups that I'm talking about, I don't mean fringe in beliefs, I mean people that aren't really WNBA fans, but like the fringes, people that are not sports fans are caught up in this, and they're not caught up in Draymond Green's nonsense.
Fair enough.
Stay I think away. That's about right.
I think so. I think you covered it.
All right, so this actually, it's not sports, but it relates to this idea of how things blow up and how things have grown. So, you know, we've had how many people on, Dave, that will look at the Republican Party and conservatism, and they see that there's a wing of this that they don't like, right? There's like the normies, and then there's the people that are extreme. And we see it, too, on the left, right? And I saw an interesting tweet from someone who has been a progressive activist for a long time, and basically saying progressivism died in 2024. Her point was essentially the extreme side is going too far. It's ruining the whole thing. And I feel like both sides have people that are recognizing that the edges are ruining it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we talk about that all the time. And the reason I bring it up is I want to go back to a story that I probably brought up maybe a year ago, might have been that, roughly that. But this idea about how history repeats in cycles, and there were these social scientists that did studies in the 90s that essentially predicted this would happen in some form in the 90s. They said in the 2000s, I think they said around 2005, but I think it wound up being 9/11 in 2001, was kind of, they said there would be a sudden spark that would kind of like change the world a little bit. It would change things and change people's views. And they essentially predicted that, not specifics what would happen, but that by now we would be looking at a dangerous time, and that in the year around 2025, there's going to be that America, quote, will pass through a great gate in history. They said that gate, quote, could be an apocalypse or glory.
Hmm.
But that, and it says the nation could be ruined, democracy destroyed, millions of people killed, or America could enter a new golden age. And essentially the point that I'm making, a question I'm asking for the group, and the point that I'm making is this just unavoidable? Because if you look, because this was all based on historical study. This wasn't a Nostradamus thing. This wasn't, you know, we saw it in the crystal ball. This was looking at patterns over time. And it's not an exact amount of time, but there are cycles that we go through in the world. We go through wars. We go through the clash of the left versus the right, right? Conservative versus liberal ideologies. We go through fascism versus communism. We go through all of these things. And historically speaking, these cycles are very easy to see. If you go back, I mean, if you just use the United States, you go from the Revolution eventually to the Civil War. From the Civil War, you end up getting into the Great Depression and World War I, World War II, that era. You come out of that, and then eventually you're going to get into civil rights, and you're going to get into Vietnam. And then after that, we end up getting to the next cycle, which started with 9/11. And they go through, there are like four turns.
Yeah,
there's,
yeah, yeah.
I'm going through all that.
Yeah.
So is this all just unavoidable is my point? Do we all in the middle, we normies are just like, this is stupid, we don't want to be a part of it, but it feels unavoidable. Because in history, it shows these things keep happening over and over again with human beings.
I think so. And I think, too, we need to remember that we think that things have never been like this before. And in some ways, I think that's true. But when JFK was running, oh my God, we're going to elect a Catholic? Who's going to be beholden to the Pope? You can't elect a Catholic
right.
to the presidency. There are so many times Reagan, this is going to sound stupid, but Reagan Republicanism would not have happened without Reagan. None of this populism movement with MAGA would 100% not have happened without Trump. So I think that there is a coming together of an anxiety in a nation and a person who has the gravitas and the power and the charm, whether you find them charming or not, enough people do, that they lead countries and organizations and religions into a new place. And I think that we're simply living through one of those with Donald Trump. And I'm convinced he's going to win. I had some conversations over the weekend with some very, very smart, very successful, financially successful non-weirdos who are all in for Trump. And what they were basically saying was, he's a playboy. He's an old school man. They're trying to get rid of masculinity by calling it toxic masculinity. He's just very masculine. And he is a New York real estate guy, and he punches hard, and he doesn't pull his punches. And we're living in this, let's have transgender people read the Fluffy Bunny to our kids at libraries, and everyone has to give their pronouns, and people just can't take how manly and old school he is. And the person telling me this would have passed a lie detector test. Like, this is the way they view Donald Trump. And so it's easy for someone like me who doesn't like Donald Trump to marginalize all the Donald Trump supporters and picture them all dressed like Betsy Ross and Uncle Sam on stilts, and they're all a bunch of freaks and weirdos. It's just not true. And now that he's broken into this UFC bro thing, and you've got all these young guys, Phoebe's age, who are super into Donald Trump, I just feel like he's going to carry the day, because what he's going up against is a very weak Joe Biden.
At least perceptually.
Perceptually,
yeah, for
sure. Yes. And I really came to the conclusion over the weekend, and we still have a ways to go, but I don't know what's going to happen. He's already got 34 felony convictions. I don't think there are that many people between now and November who are going to say, you know what, can't do it. But he has a huge amount of momentum. And like I said, the people I were talking to are normal, successful, non-crazy people who just view it very differently. All right. So my vacation was put off for a week or so. Andrew, you got to take yours, but you broke your vacation rules.
I did too much. I was running around the whole time.
What were you doing?
I didn't rely. We did a bunch of hikes, which, ugh. Man, let me tell you
Fair
what.
Enough.
It was very pretty. We went to Haha Tonka State Park, which is a very, very pretty state park that's just a little bit south of the lake proper. And it's very, very pretty. It's very nice down there, but it was also extremely hot this weekend. And my wife is somehow immune to all of that. So she's like, I want to go on hikes. And I was like, I would rather do
anything. So you could have just sat in one place and just taken in the view. You didn't need multiple views.
Oh, yeah. You just sit
You're like, whatever's around that corner looks a lot like this.
That's the thing. It's all trees. You know? I mean, you see one of them. You see all of them. There are three bees in wildlife that I always really wanted to see. I've never gotten to see one. And that's beavers, bears, and armadillos. And I've never gotten to see any of them in the wilderness. But I did get to see beavers this trip. That was fun. Mm. They were at the state park. They were swimming around, being cute. That was a lot of fun. I was very excited to see that. Still, I keep hearing about how armadillos are this huge menace pest everywhere. I saw a bunch of smashed ones, but you never see any of them alive.
Where were they smashed?
Oh, all over the side of the highways down there.
Yeah, I don't think they're agile.
They are. No, they are not. And they seem to exist only to wander into traffic and get flattened by a truck.
Yeah, what is it they're supposed to give you? Leprosy or something like that?
Yeah,
I think so.
They carry nasty diseases and they ruin people's gardens and stuff. So I think people, because a lot of the gore, if you will, was on the side of the road. So I think people are going out of their way to kill these poor things. Because I've heard they're
loud. What was your second one? Beavers and
Bears. Oh. I really wanted to see a bear very badly.
I really don't.
I'm desperate to see one. I want to see one so bad. They're so cute.
They have these things called zoos.
That don't count.
No, he wants to see him in the wilderness.
Ah.
Yeah, I want to see a real one.
In fact, I just bought bear spray for my hiking.
Good thing to have. You want to see them from a distance.
You're Colorado bears are built different. Those aren't Missouri bears.
Missouri
bears are nice and friendly.
Missouri bears are dim-witted black bears that roll around. The Colorado bears, but you should have the bear spray for that. That's,
and you were without the internet?
Yeah, 90% of the time I did not have internet. We didn't have internet at the Airbnb. And I told the person, she kept asking me, I think she was waiting for me to complain because she kept asking me, is there anything wrong? She emailed me three times. And then finally I got back to her. I was like, you know what? Actually, yeah, the internet doesn't really work. It said the internet worked, but it works for... And then she's like, well, it says it works on my end. And I go, oh, well, it doesn't. And I did everything that I could have done to fix it. And it just kind of
Yeah, you had your own place this time?
Yeah.
You didn't sleep with the owner?
No. That was only...
You're moving up in the world.
That was only Peoria. Now the Ozarks, we can get our own place. But she was getting real snippy with me. And so I just went internetless for sometimes when we would leave the Airbnb, we'd manage to get some service or whatever. But I wanted to see what you guys thought about that, because I know you guys have expressed man, that sounds like heaven. It sounds awesome to have, four days.
Well, if you're prepared for it, if you know you're going into it knowing you're not going to have internet, but if you're expecting internet and not getting it, that is a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah. It sucked. It was no fun. I kept wanting to play on my phone and do stuff, and I couldn't.
And avoid the woods.
And avoid the woods.
But how are you going to see any bears if you avoid the woods?
That's the thing. It was so much harder to try and sell my wife on not going outside.
What if you would have seen a bear? What was your plan?
Look at it. Go ahead, Mr. Bear. Wave
at it.
Solid
plan.
I got to be honest with you. I can vibe with that. I get the idea. I like observing wildlife. It's fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to go up to the bear.
Probably not a great idea.
I would have had to stop my wife from doing
they're
that.
They're a little bitey.
Sir, I would love to shake your paw.
Yeah, they're a little bitey. You don't want
to
do that.
That's what Megan would be trying to do. She'd be all up in the bear's face trying to give it
you
hugs.
You appear to be one of these Missouri idiot bears I was just talking about.
Now,
that was you besmirching our name on
I know,
the
you're
radio?
Just a simple country Missouri bear.
You sit in traffic now, but later... There's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DJS 237. Time to talk to our buddy Tom Ackerman. I was talking to Ack on the way out today, and he was saying that someone was, Tom, you're going to do the Glover Show. What are you going to talk about? He's like, no friggin' idea, man. It's freewheeling. You don't know where it's going to go. And we're going to do that today. We're going to talk. We're going to talk some sports. Going to talk some Cardinals. But first, we're going to talk some Tom Ackerman. So, Tom, I know you pretty well, but there are a lot of things I don't know about you since sports has been such a big deal in your life. What was your personal Tom Ackerman sports background? What kind of an athlete were you back in the old day?
Oh, man. I mean, my love was baseball and basketball growing up. Those were two sports that I played at a young age. I played football starting in seventh grade. I only lasted a few years because I wasn't really growing. You know, I was pretty short and light when I was a football player. 5'7", 130 pounds when I was a junior in high school. And I played basketball though. And the only reason they kept me on the team, I think, is because I could shoot it. Otherwise, it wasn't very fast, couldn't jump very high. Not a great athlete, but I could shoot the ball. So they kept me on the varsity team. And for football, you know, I was a quarterback, but I was small. And again, couldn't hardly see over the line and didn't have a lot of speed. That's not going to do very well for you. So I became the public address announcer for JV football at my high school. And that turned into the varsity public address announcer left to go to take a job at Northern Illinois University. And I took his spot. And so I became the PA announcer at Country Day, and it was a good football program. It was Saturday afternoons. People were coming around, and that's what started my whole career broadcasting because I enjoyed it so much. I was, you know, studying rosters and plays and the teams, and it just kind of took off from there.
Isn't that amazing? And I don't mean this as a joke. Had you been 2 inches taller back then, you might have been the starting quarterback, but never gone to college and never gone into broadcasting.
That's interesting. You know, I came back from Indiana University my freshman year, and I was 6'2", about 190 pounds. And so I grew from 5'7 as a junior in high school to 6'2 when I was a freshman. And my coach saw me and he's like, "Are you kidding me?" He's like, "What in the world?" I'm like, "Hey, coach, how's it going?" You know, so I don't know. I was a late bloomer and, you know, it would have been nice to be it, basketball too. It would have been nice to be 6'2 playing the position. But even then, you know, like my daughter, Audrey, my oldest daughter, Erica, you know, they play sports and they naturally just kind of get these sports. For me, it took a little bit of work. I mean, I was not a naturally gifted athlete, but I loved sports and I loved studying them. And I became good at the sports that I really worked at. And, you know, those were some of them right there, baseball, basketball, football. And a little bit later in high school, started playing golf and I still play it. Although it's more just having fun with my buddies than anything. I'm not too serious of a golfer.
So I'm a few years older than you. And when I was a kid, I, of course, was into the Cardinals. The 70s Cardinals were my team. They weren't good, but I loved them. But I also loved the Big Red Machine. I loved the Dodgers. I loved Davey Lopes. I loved Ron Say. I loved all those guys.
The Penguin.
Besides the Cardinals, who were your other teams that you were into?
I mean, I was a big Mizzou fan growing up. My dad went to Missouri. I loved Mizzou basketball. My love for college basketball comes from Norm Stewart's basketball teams. And my earliest memories are going to the Hearn Center with my dad. The basketball team was awesome. I mean, they hit number one in the nation when I was really young in the 80s. Now, on the football side, they were bad. I mean, that it was bad, but I enjoyed it. I loved the tailgating. I loved the pageantry of it. I was a big, big Mizzou guy growing up. Mizzou and the Cardinals were my teams, and I loved the Blues. And as Brett Hall came into town, I fell in love with the Blues even more. I loved the Blues growing up with Bernie Federko and Brian Sutter, but when Hall came, it took, and anyone listening knows, they owned the town. I mean, they absolutely owned the town. So I was obsessed with the Blues in high school. And then, you know, the NFL was always a love of mine, but our teams came and went. I mean, we had the Cardinals, they left. And then when the Rams came, I was in college, of course, got into that and started covering them when they went to the Super Bowl. But those were really it. And then, you know, I went to college in Indiana. So from my freshman year in Indiana, really my senior year in high school, when I knew I was going there, I was obsessed with college basketball to begin with. My 4 years at Indiana were like, a basketball education. I mean, I thought I knew hoops till I went to Indiana, where everybody knows hoops. I mean, Indiana's like baseball for us.
Yeah.
You know, you walk into Assembly Hall and you've got 17,000 people that think they should be the coach. So that was a fun experience for me, and it still is in a lot of ways. A reminder when I go back there how smart those fans are about your team. You know, they know as much about your team as you do. So it's pretty fun.
So what job did Tom Ackerman almost end up in if it had not been broadcasting?
So my dad, who I thought about a lot yesterday, he passed away right before my 18th birthday, very suddenly, a heart attack after my high school graduation, a couple weeks after my graduation. He and I, when we were talking about colleges, he was a co-founder of Sunshine Drapery. And, you know, I was really in line to run that business, drapery, furniture rental. But he accepted my love for broadcasting and really supported it and wanted me to be a sportscaster and said, go for it and I'll support you. And, you know, he and I went to Indiana, fell in love with it. I've told you the story about meeting Bob Knight mm-hmm. and how that all came about. And it just was a crazy time. But he supported it. At the same time, though, he had this little backup plan for me, and he was right. He said, I want you to apply to UNLV, and I'll tell you why. Because hotel and casino management was never going to go away. The travel industry will always be there. And in St. Louis, they're going to allow casinos, and it's going to be a big business around the country. Eventually, sport. I mean, he had all this vision. He said, eventually, they're going to legalize sports gambling. I think you should be in the casino hotel business if you're not broadcasting. So I got into UNLV. I thought about it, but I ended up going to Indiana, and the rest is history. But that's interesting. And to this day, I love hotels. You know, when I go to a hotel, I love checking it all out. I love the hospitality industry. And who knows, maybe I'll be back in it.
You know, Tom, somewhere out there, there's another version of you in the multiverse whose dad is a play-by-play guy for the Cardinals. But you're like, but Dad, I love draperies.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I grew up in the back where they made the drapes, and I, you know, my first job was furniture delivery. I delivered from Sunshine Furniture Rental, and I would get in the truck with the guys. I was 14 years old.
That's an education.
Yeah, and you know, they take me around town, and you know, they're smoking cigarettes, and you know, I'm sitting there riding in the truck with them, and we'd go deliver furniture, and then we'd go eat a ton of food, and then we'd go deliver furniture. I mean, it was wild.
I love it.
And then when I was 15, I was a caddy at Westwood Country Club. And when I was 16, I started working in my dad's restaurant. My dad and some friends started Memphis Best Barbecue. And I was a barbecue cook, and I use those skills to this day.
But your dad was a stud.
He was fun. He was a guy's guy. Like, everyone liked being around him. He could talk to anybody, and everyone felt comfortable around him. He could talk to the guy that ran the company, and he'd feel just as comfortable talking to the guy that was cleaning the building after hours. I mean, he was that kind of guy, and I miss him a lot, but I learned a lot from him in that he wasn't like a big booming personality necessarily. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that everyone liked being around.
Very cool. I'm glad we did this.
Yeah.
This is really cool. Thank you, Ack. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
251 DG, Ask Sweet 16 coming up in a little over 1 hour. I thought this was kind of an interesting story. We've all heard of Logan Airport there near Boston. And Bill Russell, the Celtics great, they are wanting to rename Logan Airport after Bill Russell. And there's a big move to do that. And they were talking about it, and you're like, well, you can, it's tradition. And someone made the point, like, it's not our tradition. No one alive today remembers Logan the same way that, like, what's Lambert? You know, what do you think of the thought that every couple of generations you rename things like that?
Mm.
So that it's something that's meaningful to the people who are currently not dead.
Yeah, I like it. I think I think you can use the
same. The Glover Dome. I mean, I'm just throwing things out there.
That's one thing.
No, I think
that's a good idea.
The same argument that you do for, like, you know, a school that they want to be renamed because it's named after a slaver or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that same logic applies.
But let's, for this thought experiment, let's assume that there's no... Logan was a great guy.
Lamer this guy was a general, right? So he was a war hero, local, you know, I think he's a state politician. So that's who Edward Lawrence Logan was, General Logan. So he was, again, a guy of good reputation.
Yeah. I mean, they could always just put up a plaque that's like formerly Logan Airport, and here's this person's story. But, I mean, I don't think there's anything sacred about the naming of an airport.
Or a building or anything
right.
else.
Like,
yeah.
It's all pretty arbitrary.
I think it's to the point where, like, so this General Logan passed away in 1939. So anybody that would have known him or appreciated that or whatever is probably not around. Or if they are, not for much longer.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that it should be washed from history. That's not the point. But there's nothing wrong either with what's the alternative? We're going to build a new airport for Bill Russell? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It's okay to recognize new people when they come along.
When Bulger and I did the USO, we wanted to rename it after Rocky Sickman. And they wouldn't let us, so we did the Rachel thing. We did a rededication and did a big plaque, and so the plaque's there, and it's rededicated to Rocky Sickman. But, yeah, we got a lot of pushback for that.
Hmm.
I mean, I'd never heard of him until I looked it up now because you brought up this story. Now, I don't live in Boston, but I don't know the history of a lot of names of airports, unless it's a president's name or something.
Why is our airport named that?
Got me.
All right, let's find the Google.
And maybe that's an argument in favor of renaming it. It's that nobody,
if you got to Google it,
nobody,
it's fair game.
Well, it's like nobody really cares who the guy was named after the airport.
It's named after Albert Bond Lambert, an aviation pioneer and prominent St. Louis aviator. Lived from 1875 to 1946.
Sounds like a nerd.
He learned to fly with the Wright brothers.
We should rename it the Glover.
So he's an OG. He was all the way back.
He sure was.
Glover International Airport.
I don't need the airport. I don't need the airport.
You don't want the airport? Okay.
No. I'll just take a just that name makes, a name a parking spot after
that
me.
Makes
I'm
sense.
Fine. It's the Wheeler spot.
That makes sense. I don't know if I'd want an airport.
I'm fine with like a deck at Riverport.
You know what I've always really wanted is to buy like a brick at a park or something.
Yeah,
you always
yeah.
see those, and
sure.
or people have the benches. I'm like, wow.
We
you
always
the
do
bench
those.
At the, you sprung for the bench. That's
we're doing
awesome.
A, we're doing a bench for my mom at,
my gosh.
At Glazebrook and Godfrey.
Yeah. Nice.
What a great park, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we're super excited about it.
Would you just have a brick that said Rachel?
No, I want to get one for my cat from my last neighborhood I lived
in.
Oh,
that's even weirder.
Just Rachel one that just says Lucy Zimmerman.
Okay.
No explanation.
Rachel was here.
Like Lucy the cat.
I don't know. I'm fine with keeping Lambert named after this Lambert fellow. He seems like a...
It's all
like
fine.
An influential
like,
person.
I don't think it's a mandatory thing. I just think the point is if people want to do it and people say, yeah, let's do that, it's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Things change over time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure people then... In the early 1930s and 40s when these airports were named, probably had renamed other things from previous generations.
Yeah, they're probably pissed that they named it after Lambert.